Want to know our best-kept hosting secrets?
They're all inside our STR Must-Haves Master List, our secret weapon that continues to transform ordinary host into extraordinary host.
The Must-Haves Master List is a checklist that we've been perfecting for over 12 years.
Picture this: your guest checks into your short-term rental, and they're instantly wowed by the thoughtful touches and impeccable amenities. Why? Because you've got the TFE Must-Haves Master List by your side.
This checklist has all the insider secrets that even the best hosts didn't know they were missing.
We challenge you to take the checklist into your property today. See how many items you can mark off of this list. You didn't get them all? No worries. This is your chance to level up. So go to hostchecklist.com and grab your free copy. That's hostchecklist.com to download our coveted checklist today.
You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation
and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, we have welcomed thousands of guests from over 30 countries, earning us over $1 million and garnering us thousands of five-star reviews.
We love sharing creative ways for your listing to stand out, serve your guests, and be profitable. Each episode, we will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry.
Or we will share our stories of our own experiences so you can implement actual improvements to your rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Before we dive into the content, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
My favorite operations and cleaning tool. Come on, everyone. You know what it is by now. It's Breezeway. It just got a whole lot better for Airbnb hosts.
Breezeway's platform has always helped hosts manage work like cleaning, maintenance, and inspections at their properties. But now their technology is integrated with Airbnb, which means you can connect your Airbnb reservation info with Breezeway, helping you save even more of your precious time, like automatically notifying your cleaners on a new reservation or changes to an existing reservation.
You can use Breezeway to schedule cleaning, inspections, and maintenance tasks using smart checklists and automated messaging to maintain a consistent guest experience.
Connect your Airbnb guest reviews with individual tasks in Breezeway. For example, fridge stopped working and the guest mentioned it in your review, a Breezeway maintenance task will help you make sure it gets fixed as soon as possible.
Respond to guest messages all in one platform. Hosts can now view and respond to Airbnb message threads within the Breezeway platform.
And that's not all. The Breezeway Guide is a personalized digital welcome book, and they also have Breezeway Assist, a 24-hour call service supplemented with Breezeway's AI-driven engine, are also connected through this Airbnb integration.
There are so many things that Breezeway can help you tackle, so check out Breezeway for yourself. TFE listeners will receive free implementation when you decide to make Breezeway a part of your hosting operational strategy, just like Annette and I have. Visit breezeway.io/TFE to learn more. That's breezeway.io/TFV. Hello, welcome back for another great episode. My name is Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant. I'm Annette Grant.
Wait, we should leave that.
I like there. That. Okay.
Let's not. I don't know. I went real deep.
Listen, listeners, okay. Usually we would stop that, re-record, but we're going to keep it. Do you want to try one more time, though?
Yeah, please.
Okay. I'm Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are.
Thanks for visiting. There we go.
Oh, that was good, though.
That was good. I can make
fun of myself.
Annette, we, not too long ago, wrapped up TFEcon. We organized a full-on conference.
It felt like our wedding.
I've never had a wedding,
but it felt like a wedding.
We were the brides, bridezillas.
Just joking.
Hopefully we weren't bridezillas.
We weren't. It was awesome.
But amidst that conference, which was so fun, so successful, and you also moved twice. Can you share why you moved the first time and then why you moved again, like a couple weeks later, a month later?
I'm in search of a view.
Okay.
And I had a water view and now I have a city view. So I'm just searching for this. I'm not in a tireless search, but there's certain things I want to check off the list of things in my life. And I have the water view and now I have the city view. And I'm very excited about that. But I am extremely independent to a fault, and I thought it was going to be super easy because I'm also a minimalist, and moving twice, even with help, was a lot.
I kind of told you
so. I know, but it's okay.
No, okay. But now that you have, and you have a killer view, listeners, we'll have to maybe share it on Instagram
show the
soon.
View. Yeah.
But do you feel, for now, do you feel satisfied with the view?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I need to settle in, like our office, our studio isn't done.
Yeah. That's next on list. I'm very excited to actually like paint the walls and like brand it and I don't know, have it be splashier than it is now.
You moved too.
I did move into my dream home.
And there's things, right?
There's so many things.
We're going to get it finished. We'll have to go over there and do a tour too for everybody.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
But we did all of that amongst our conference. So we're back on the airwaves today. Even though you haven't missed us on the airwaves.
Yeah, a lot has happened.
We got things done ahead of time.
Okay, let's get down to business. Who are we sharing this week for our hashtag STR Share Sunday? If you're new here, thanks for visiting. First of all, thank you for tuning in.
And if you're old here,
thank you for tuning in.
Extra thank you.
But every week we share one of you. And the easiest way to find you is for you to use our hashtag on Instagram. We are on that hashtag, seeing who's using it, looking at your properties, and we share you here in the podcast. You get a big old blast in our email list. We share you on Instagram, of course, too. So now, who are we sharing this week?
Today, we are sharing at The Black Shack, and that's TheBlackShack. And they are coming from the land down under. They are in Queensland, Australia, and it's amazing. It's beautiful. I love their logo. Please check it out. Couple of things, just wow, wow, wow. Let's put that out there. But I want to highlight the outdoor area is unbelievable. They actually have a garden that you can like pick from and bring the fruits and veggies, I think, in from the garden. But one thing that's like stuck out to me that anybody can do anywhere is on their highlights. They went through their 2022 and 2023 guests, but it's really cute. Their guest book is the old school handwritten kind. And so cute. They gave a highlight and a shout out to all of their guests and then tagged them. And I just thought it was like paying homage to that old school guest book where people could write a little thought about their stay. And as we're heading into the next year, this is something easy that you could add to your property. And I think A, you will get a lot of delight from it. And then B, the other guests staying in your home. And just want to give the Black Shack a huge shout out too, because they are crushing it with doing a ton of reels and just simple posting. And I know it can get tiring, host, trying to create content. But follow your other hosts and get some ideas from them for sure. And then one other thing you said, Sarah, was they had a CTA right in the beginning.
Yeah,
right?
They tell you what to do.
Start planning.
They don't say, I think you should or think about. No, start planning your getaway to this beautiful cabin nestled in the forest. I love that. Like we really do have to tell our potential customers, our potential guests, what we want them to do. And when we do that, you'll be surprised at how they follow suit.
Market.
All right, let's get into today's content. Today, we are bringing on truly, I mean, she feels like an old friend, but we just this year met her. We asked her to come speak on a panel at TFECon. She obliged. She's from California. She flew all the way to Ohio, graced our stage. And just in case you couldn't make it to TFECon, we invited her here on the podcast. And so today we're going to discuss so many things. Marilyn Taylor has been a short-term rental host since 2004. So yes, my friends, that is pre-Airbnb. Is a fellow HGTV alum and now focuses on helping short-term rental hopefuls and current hosts how to build a profitable, sustainable, heart-centered hospitality business. I know she's an Airbnb ambassador, so she helps hosts there. But Annette, today, one of my favorite takeaways from this episode is shifting that mindset around, oh my gosh, she took bookings, quote unquote, direct bookings before Airbnb existed. And now so many hosts are terrified to book a guest off of Airbnb.
Yeah, she brought some calm to me too.
She brought a lot of calm about that whole process and what that means. You know, she got kicked off of Airbnb and she's a rule follower. So we're excited to share that story with you. Let's get to that interview with Marilyn. Marilyn. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I am so excited to finally be doing this with you guys.
I can't believe it's been this long.
We're just going to get it out at the very beginning. Listeners, please go follow Marilyn online. I think years now, if you like the content and the education and any information that Sarah and I provide, we guarantee that you will love adding Marilyn to the assortment. We have vibed with her, like her messaging that she puts out, the way that she hosts, and she is just a star. So we're really excited to introduce her to everyone today and dig in to more about her story.
Yeah, Marilyn, take us back right around 2000. What were you doing and how did you start investing in real estate, and take us from there?
Okay. So in 2000, I was auditioning for dance gigs and working as a makeup artist. I lived in LA. So, you know, I was doing the gig life, and the 9/11 happened. So this really was like 2001. And I feel like I already kind of had investing on the brain. I had, you know, my Rich Dad Poor Dad book, and, you know, I was like dabbling and trying to learn the concept of investing, but I hadn't really made any moves until 9/11 happened, and I knew I wasn't going to have any gigs, and I was living penny to penny. So I had the opportunity to jump in to mortgages. So random, but I had a friend working at ditech.com, and he was like, come work over here. I make like $5,000 a month and I read books all day. And I was like, well, that sounds good. Okay. Like, I guess I could do that. And I think because of my sales background, I was a makeup artist for Bobbi Brown Cosmetics and a few other lines. And I kicked behind selling lipstick. So, you know, I figured if I believe in something and I know it and I think I'm helping somebody, I could probably sell that too. So I just have to learn what a mortgage is. And so I got into mortgages for 2 years, and now I'm in an environment with, it was me when I first got hired, me and 47 other like dudes that all came from stockbroker. Like they were all just in the industry, right? They were all very like financial minded. It was the boiler room basically, and me. And I think because I grew up between two brothers, it was fine for me. And I liked the competition. I feel very comfortable around men. And so I just absorbed all of that. And they were the first property I ever bought was with those guys, because a bunch of them started going to Vegas. It was back when it was like the boom, right? Everything was booming. Interest rates were just coming down. It was, so by the time, you know, Mr. I make $5,000 a month and read books all day. Yeah. By the time I got hired, it was nonstop, 14 hours a day. If you hang up the phone, you immediately have another call. Like it was crazy. So it was definitely trial by fire. But those guys all went to Vegas, and I'm like, who's buying what properties? I want to do it too. So I had been dabbling in the stock market a little bit, and I sold my Apple stock at $24 a share to go buy. Damn it. to go buy a house in Vegas. And that was my very first rental property. And I just, that was a long-term rental, just, you know, standard rental. And so that's what I was doing in 2000. So that was, by the time I bought the house, it was 2002. But 2 years at Ditech, I learned so much about investing and kind of broke through that fear, you know, of taking that first step, because I was around a bunch of other people doing it too. And so that really helped.
Well, and the market crashed in 2008. So talk us through that. And how did you not lose hope for real estate?
Yeah. So, I got out of mortgages in around 2002. And then I was moving to New York City to dance there, because I was like, I've got money in the bank. I can do anything I want. Let me move to New York City. So I moved to New York City, meet my husband 2 weeks before I moved to New York City. And he lives in LA, of course. So I do a year in New York City, and end up back in mortgages after I move back. So now I'm working for a broker, and this is during that period of time when all those nutty mortgages came on the market, right? So Ditech was all A paper, 30-year fix, 15-year fix, maybe a few ARMs here and there. But I watched that whole thing happening, and I couldn't wrap my brain around a lot of those loans because they were being sold to grandmas. And like, I understood them for investor loans, right? Like, they made sense for that, for a short-term loan. Anyway, so it crashed and I lost my mortgage income, right? But by then, by 2008, let me back up. So during that period, my husband is from Cape Cod and he had friends selling a house. So I'm already in the mindset of, I want to be a real estate investor, right? And I'm like heading down that path, and I go to a real estate college for 2 years and learn every possible strategy I can possibly learn to be a real estate investor. And of course, by then HGTV is like the big thing and everybody's flipping houses. And I'm like, I love this. So I see an opportunity to buy our friend's house in Cape Cod. They were selling their house off market and they knew that I was interested in real estate investing. So they're like, Marilyn, would you be interested? And I was like, why? Yes. Yes, I would. And so we bought their house off market, and now Cape Cod is a vacation rental area. So I knew this was not going to be a long-term property, and, or that it wouldn't be long-term rental. So that was my first vacation rental. And I didn't even think twice about it. I just set it up. I designed it from here, and Pinterest didn't even exist yet. So, you know, I had to pull magazine pages and then go find things that looked similar, order them, and have them there ready to set up. We set up that house in 4 days and put it on the market. And we almost killed each other. I mean, talk about putting together, this is back when like IKEA furniture was okay to use in a rental, and the little, you know, things that you're turning, trying to put the pieces together. Anyway.
Yes.
And then we went to Paris and it was amazing. So that was the first rental. But then we had the opportunity to buy his parents' house also in Cape Cod. They were retiring. They wanted to sell their house. They wanted to go around in an RV. And so they offered us a gift of equity. And so, of course, no brainer. Yes. No money down for another rental, cash flow. Yes. So that house is what taught me how to become an interior designer. It was through my making over both houses that I started to realize that I actually had a talent for that. So then it was always side hustle for me. And so then I became an interior designer, and I started doing that primarily for about 10 years. So by the time 2008 had happened, it didn't affect us, because people going to Cape Cod I think the level of rental that we put together in Cape Cod was in a demographic. It attracted a demographic that wasn't really impacted. So they were still coming for the summer, you know, and it really was just a very seasonal rental. So it didn't impact me in that way. It impacted me in the sense that I lost my six-figure income. Hollywood shut down. He, you know, my husband, at the same time, around the same time. So we got married 2006. By mid-2007 is when the mortgage industry really crumbled. And then it was 2008 when everything went to hell. So yeah, so we just hung on. And that extra cash flow, let me tell you, helpful. It was helpful. But we still, we bought a house for us to live in. And thank God we bought conservatively, because had we not, we would have been bankrupt after 2008.
There is so much value there, because Marilyn, when you bought the first Cape Cod property, did you manage it yourself fully?
Oh, 100%.
And where did you list it?
Remotely.
Do you remember where you listed it?
Oh, VRBO. It was the only game in town.
Got it.
VRBO. Okay. And there was actually, no, there was another website called weneedavacation.com.
Okay.
I'm trying to think if that was around in the beginning. I feel like maybe it wasn't. Maybe that came up a little bit later. But VRBO was literally, and I can't call it Vrbo. I've been calling it VRBO for way too many years. And it was just vacation rentals by owner. And then HomeAway came along and bought VRBO. And then HomeAway was my favorite platform. You know, but back then, every booking was a direct booking, right? It wasn't like Airbnb. Like I feel like people coming into this industry now,
right?
It is such a different monster now compared to what it was then, right? Like you talked to your prospective guest before they booked. You actually got on the telephone and had a conversation. And, you know, and I think I did really well because I knew from sales that the first person to contact this person is the one that's going to most likely get the booking. And I still apply that today, right? Because if people are inquiring or you know, now we have instant books. So most bookings come from an instant book scenario. But those that don't, if it's an inquiry, I'm like so on top of that because I want to be the first person responding to them so that I can secure the booking. That's a whole nother conversation.
You said HomeAway was your favorite. Can you tell us why?
You know, because VRBO was old and antiquated. It had been around forever and it was just bare bones basic. HomeAway came along and it was cute. The platform was really, you know, like aesthetically pleasing, easy to use. It just seemed more updated, right? That was really the only reason because ultimately it was the same thing. If you had like HomeAway quickly bought VRBO or was it the other way around? I don't remember, but HomeAway just became my platform of choice just for simplicity of use.
So being able to compare life pre-Airbnb, which is anything like pretty much before like 2008, and now, Marilyn, what is different in your perspective for like the guest and the booking process? And I mean, anything that comes to your mind right when I ask that question, what is the biggest difference you've noticed pre-Airbnb to now?
Well, pre-Airbnb, I loved actually being able to build that relationship and connection with the guest and speak to them and gain their trust. We gained each other's trust prior to the booking. And that is the piece that I don't love, that when Airbnb came along, I remember just being like, okay, it took me 2 years. It was like 2009 when I first got on Airbnb. Because when I looked at the platform, I was like, wait, what? I can't talk to my guest first and I'm not going to get any contact information. And I just felt like they took so much control. Mm-hmm. And funny story, I actually got kicked off of Airbnb early on because, listen, I'm a rule breaker. I'm just
you are? Right, wait a minute.
Oh, I totally am.
What did you do?
Hilarious because, you know, I was straight A student. I'm like typical Virgo. Like I like to be the good girl, but if something makes sense to me and someone's trying to put a rule in my way, I'll just break the rule. So the rule I broke was that they did not want me taking security deposits. Well, you know, this is a part of my whole process. And what do you mean I can't take a security deposit? So I'm just supposed to, and this is before air cover,
right?
No guarantees. Like there was nothing like that. And I'm like, so not only do I not get to talk to my guests and feel comfortable with them, now I have to let them stay in my house and I have no protections. Like I can't take a security deposit. What the heck? So, and I'm a total stickler for rules in this sense. Like I go and I look at their terms and conditions. It doesn't say in there that I can't take a security deposit. And so somebody complained that I was taking security deposits. This is when Airbnb came to me and said, hey, you can't do it anymore. And I'm on the phone with them. And I was like, show me in your terms and conditions where it says I can't. Show me legally where it says I can't. Well, it's in our frequently asked questions. And I was like, but that's not your legal terms and conditions. That doesn't count. And they're like, yeah, watch us. Blocked, cancel all of, they canceled all of my bookings. And I was like, oh, that's how you play. Okay. So this is an authoritarian scenario. Got it. So I was not mad that I lost it. But here's the cool thing is that because of my process, because I had rental contracts for every guest, and because in that rental contract, I got their contact information, I was able to reach out immediately to every single guest and keep every single booking.
Hey.
Because I emailed them and said, hey, so here's what just happened, but we have a contract together. Your booking is still totally secure. Let's just set up payment through PayPal. And they PayPal'd me and every single person still stayed. And I was like, that's fine. Airbnb just lost the money. Bye. And I didn't mind because I only used Airbnb for last minute bookings there anyway, because Cape Cod is such a seasonal location and people book a year in advance. And I couldn't afford the super lackadaisical. And I still, if I still was on Cape Cod, I still would not use Airbnb for my summer bookings because I can't afford their cancellation policies. They're too lackadaisical. And if somebody cancels last minute for a summer booking in Cape Cod, I am not going to earn the same amount of money. Right. By then, people that are willing to pay those prices, they've already booked. Mm-hmm. And now it's people looking for discounts. And now I have to break up my week to try to, and it's just, it's not a good scenario. So through VRBO, I was always able to keep the no cancellation policy thing, but then tell them what my cancellation policy was. And I just saw you guys did a reel on this. Like, what is your cancellation policy? And we all should have our own policy. And mine is always cancel anytime. Even if Airbnb is not going to give you your money back or VRBO, whoever, I will still give you back what I can earn minus a small admin fee to cover my time for that cancellation and having to rebook. And people love that because then it gives them more confidence. But again, that's like a whole side note. But yeah, so that's my story of getting kicked off on Airbnb.
Every morning I wake up, I grab a cup of coffee, and I log into this one website, our business banking with Relay.
If you invest in real estate, manage short-term rentals for yourself or others, flip houses, or any type of business owner, you need banking that's truly built for your business. No more fees, no more minimum balances, no more remembering hundreds of different logins and passwords, and my goodness, no more bookkeeping problems come tax season. This is why we love using Relay, and you should too. Right now, they're giving away free money.
Relay is an online banking platform that's a perfect fit for your short-term rental business. You get as many accounts as you need to organize and allocate income from things like day-to-day expenses, investments, or taxes. And again, like Sarah said, those are all free. And it's never been easier to send payments to your cleaning team, your inspection team, plumber, electrician. You can have virtual and physical Visa debit cards. You can now earn up to 3% APY with Relay savings accounts. And also Relay is FDIC insured up to $2.5 million through their banking partner, Thread Bank.
It takes less than 10 minutes to apply online, and it's absolutely free. Plus, when you fund your new Relay account, Relay will add an additional $50 to your account. That is free money, hosts. So go grab the link in the show notes and sign up with Relay today.
Sarah.
What?
I want you to take a guess how much we are going to spend this year on Airbnb and Vrbo fees.
Oof. I feel like I should know this number off the top of my head.
It's okay. Just make a guess.
16,000, 17,000?
Wrong. Over $50,000.
What?
Yes, I'm on Hostly's direct bookings ROI calculator right now, and I plugged in our stats, and yes, based on the number of bookings we anticipate for this year, that's how much Airbnb is going to charge us for fees.
That's crazy.
I know, but I've got some good news for you. Since we use Hostly as our property management software, the calculator is letting us know if we continue to improve our direct booking strategy, we can save over $15,000 per year.
Wow, that is good news. Plus, we know this. When we make it our goal to improve our direct bookings with Hostfully, we will have more control over our cancellation policies, guest database, and our overall branding differentiation in this crazy growing industry.
Yes, plus our bottom line.
Yeah.
So listeners, please give Hostfully's direct booking ROI calculator a try for yourself. And we bet you'll be excited to learn more about Hostfully's award-winning property management software and their integrated, built-in, out-of-the-box, completely customizable direct booking site for your hosting business.
And thanks for visiting, listeners. Get $100 off when they use code TFV100 at checkout. That's right. Use code TFV100 when signing up for Hostfully's property management software to get $100 off.
Let's talk. Actually, that's a really good direction to take this in, Marilyn, is, as you know this, because you work with so many newer hosts or hosts who are looking to solidify their business, you know there's so much fear out there from removing Airbnb between us and the guest. You doing this before Airbnb even existed, if you could talk, I mean, you are talking to our listeners right now, what could you share with them about that, as Wynette and I believe to be this, like, false fear, like this like made up fear that Airbnb is some sort of this like protection.
Right.
Obviously there's things you want to put in place, but let's talk about that, because you had this confidence of emailing these guests and saying, let's still do this. And you weren't nervous at all. I mean, you know, obviously they booked via the platform. So maybe that's where your confidence came from, but I think it's coming from somewhere else. So share with us that whole direct booking, removing Airbnb from the scenario and where you stand in all that today.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the beginning, every booking was a direct booking. Vrbo was just you paid to advertise on their platform and that was it. So they did nothing else for you. They weren't a payment processor. So the people were literally, yes, we want to book it. And then I would block out my calendar manually. And then I would email them a rental contract. They would put a wet signature on it and mail that back with their check, paper checks. Like that was the process. So, you know, it's just so different now. And I love technology. So like the minute that I was able to take online payments and remove that paper piece, I absolutely did. But, you know, I had already learned how to protect myself. So that was just how it was done. So it was nothing. I loved coming back off of Airbnb. Like that was not a problem for me because I had my rental contract that I used and I had my security deposit. You know, I had my processes in place. So now applying that to today's world, now we have I have built in so many different layers of protection, from how I disclose in my listings, the things that I say in my listings, the policies I put in my listings, my house rules, and I have it in multiple different places, plus the requirement of a photo ID, plus a rental contract. You know, these are all things, they're filters in place for a reason. And I always get this question, but Marilyn, aren't I going to lose bookings? Yes, you will. From the wrong guests. You don't want those bookings. And it keeps it open for the people who are okay with your policies and feel confident with your policies because they don't plan to break them. And that's who you want booking, right? So so that's why I have no issue with a direct booking now, because there's also, I have damage protection policies in place. And it's just, I vet my guests and I've had to learn how to, now I have a whole different level of spidey senses, right? Where as you're talking to your guests via technology and just the messaging system, you start to figure out like just little radar things. You get a sense for, are they being sincere? As far as taking a booking that doesn't have protections of Airbnb or something along those lines, I just don't even put any eggs in the Airbnb protection basket. I don't, because they function very similarly to an insurance company in the sense that they're going to look for reasons to not cover you. And this is why I work with companies that will cover me for any damage, anything that happens with my guests, not just accidental. And that was, I remember when Vrbo first had their, you know, and you could choose between a security deposit or a damage protection policy. And I'm the girl that reads the fine print. So I go read the fine print and I realize that those damage protection policies were written in the name of the guest, not me. Even though VRBO was making it sound like that was a protection policy for the host, they were encouraging us to use it. But when I read that the guest was the one being protected and not me, I was like, no, thank you. And then as things have progressed over the years, now there are additional companies that are for the host, but still it's accidental damage only. So they're going to go and they're going to look at your policies. And if they realize that your guest has violated one of your policies, nope, that's not accidental. And they're going to deny you. So I'm always looking for the best. I want peace of mind. This is why, like my course, and you know, I have a mentorship, like I call it the stress-free host. Like that sort of is my coined phrase, because I don't worry. If something gets damaged, I'm covered. If a guest doesn't want to, like I've had someone try to squat my rental contract, the cops are gonna come get them out. Like you know, it's very rare that anything like that happens. I think because of the type of host I am, because of the type of screening I do with my guests, the way I communicate with them, the way I connect with them, that I find that as soon as I present them with, hey, just making sure you understand my policies and that this is a good fit for you, and then I get radio silence or I'm ghosted, I know what's happening and I'm okay with it. I let them go. You know, so people are like, oh my gosh, I have to approve or decline within 24 hours. And, you know, what happens if they don't respond? I'm like, it's a decline because they're not, you know, that's how I approach it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
what are some of the, let's make this a teachable moment because I'm interested. You were saying your spidey senses go off. What are some things during the interaction with a guest that you can share with our listeners that you are an immediate like, wait, that seems a little off to me. What are some scenarios? What are some things that are said in messaging that you can share where you're like, wait a second, this is not a booking that I want to approve?
Yeah, I have a list of red flags. And so I can try to do them all off the top of my head, but here's a few that are super obvious. It's
yeah, give us a few.
Okay. So things like very last minute bookings, especially if they're local, if they want just one night, right? That's party alert. Things like, and I don't want to sound prejudiced, but I'm just going to be honest. I am a little bit. If it's a group of all dudes, especially if they're young, that's when I'm just going to ask some more questions. Like, okay, what's the age range? Because anytime I've had a rager party at my house, it's been a group of dudes. I've seen horror stories about groups of girls too. So it happens, you know, but that for me has been a red flag. When somebody is too eager and excited about your policies, oh yeah, I'm going to be the best guest you've ever had. And it just feels insincere and they're over the top and like, oh, I love it. I love all your rules. They're great. Okay. Simmer down now, you know? So like that is a red flag. Let me see. What are some others? Anything over a booking over 2 weeks from anybody who is local, I'm just going to ask more questions, right? And midterm rentals are, you know, like the rage right now. Whew, that don't get me started on that. Just the amount of additional risks you take on with 30 days plus that nobody realizes because Airbnb is just like, yes, take a 6-month booking on Airbnb and not helping hosts realize you just became a landlord.
Right.
So
Great point.
I have like, that's definitely a bone I have to pick with Airbnb. They're just not like, I get what they're doing for their business, but I think they're doing a disservice to hosts by not properly disclosing. This is a whole different ball game that you're getting into now. So yeah, for me, if it's a booking over 2 weeks, I want to know, and they live locally, I just need to understand why. And so none of these things are non-starters for me. It just means I'm going to ask more questions. So I know there's more on my red flags.
No, I love that though.
We just like to give people
a
taste
of what alerts you. I'm going to take the conversation in a little different direction, Marilyn, because you offer so much value. We just had you on the stage at TFEcon, which, by the way, thank you for your time there and your expertise. And you said something that Annette and I both talked about after the event, and it's your love of vintage pieces in your property. And I loved your reason because furniture was made so much better, you know, back in the day, back when it wasn't this like easy breezy thing to get off of these online cheaply made and cheaply offered stores. So talk to us about that balance of your interiors and furnishing them with vintage pieces. The balance not only of vintage pieces sometimes being more expensive, especially if you shop nicer consignment stores and things of that nature, but also one of our members mentioned, you know, she bought this beautiful vintage couch, but of course it has some dings on it from being, you know, well loved. And so talk to us about that and having that balance of guests appreciating the vintage furniture, but also not thinking that it's dingy or dirty or old. What does Marilyn think about when she buys vintage pieces and adds them to her property so you still feel that luxe feeling, that high-end feeling, the beautiful feeling, well-made feeling, but also not that feeling of,
hey, this has been around for a long time and has had a lot of
seen its instead of seen its better days. Yeah. It's like it's in its glory days instead of better days.
Yes. Okay. I love this topic so much. So anybody watching this on YouTube, you see behind me an array of vintage. literally every single piece within eyeshot of this screen is vintage. But I am not the girl that's going to go to an antique mall and pay a premium price for my vintage. I am the girl that thrifts and that goes on Facebook Marketplace. I love a deal. So that's how I approach vintage shopping for my rental. You know, I would not ever put a piece that I spent $1,200 on in, unless it's a super luxury property, right? So let's just say it's like an end table that is $1,200 on Cherish. I just wouldn't do it. I probably paid $40 for that. So, you know, there's it's multi-level. I love the fact that it brings character. These vintage pieces have so much character. But I also make sure that they function properly so that it doesn't, guests aren't like, well, it looks cute, but I can't open the drawers.
Right.
You know, that's not fun. So I look for pieces that if I know that the top is going to get damaged, I'm just going to have a piece of glass cut to put on top of it, you know. But I mostly will just, I love a place that feels collected. Now, when it comes to things like a sofa, I'm not going to use vintage for that. I just won't because number one, let me back up on that. I think in some scenarios I would, if it was leather or something like that. But again, it would have had to have been a really good deal because I don't want to feel heartbroken if my guests destroy it, you know? So it really is a combination, like almost everything in my property Chateau Vin, I got screaming deals on almost everything in that house. Like it's nuts. And so because of that, like now I have the bonus of these gorgeous pieces that are probably worth a ton of money, but it wasn't a ton of money out of my pocket. So now my guests get the benefit of that beautiful quality furniture without me having the fear of them destroying it, you know. But then I also have, you know, my damage protection policies, which help me feel better about it. But, you know, I don't know. I feel like nowadays with design, even if a place is designed nicely, I just am seeing so much cookie cutter. Like, I just feel like you see the same style of design over and over and over and over. And, oh, it just makes it so easy to stand out.
How many of your guests talk about your design? What do you think the percentage of guests booking your properties where it's specifically due to your design?
Like 85%, if not more.
Wow.
And they say it in their reviews. If you go look at the reviews on my property, like they almost all mention how beautiful the house is, the impeccable design, blah, 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 blah. And I designed it specifically because I wanted my guests to have an amazing experience in the house. I wanted my house to feel like a destination. I wanted it to feel like you were somewhere other than Southern or Central California. I wanted it to feel like you were in Europe somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. That was the goal. And I've accomplished that because people are reflecting that back to me in their reviews. I'll have guests that weren't even on the Airbnb booking reach out to me and say that they love the design so much. Could I find out what your paint colors were, where did you get this stuff, right? They want to know. And I've actually made my rental shoppable. So anything that you can, that I did buy retail, and it is a combination of vintage and retail in my house. You know, there, like I had some, like behind me, there's a painting right there that I bought in France and I had it on the wall and then I left it and I'm like, I don't think I want that to get damaged or lost or stolen. And so then I found some pieces at Target and on Amazon that had that similar feel that I put up in its place. And, you know, and I think because there's so much richness and personality throughout the house that those retail pieces fit right in, right? It doesn't look like somebody else's living room that went and bought all the same things at Target. So, you know, I just like places to feel collected, but
And you also, you used a term at our event I'd never heard before. And it was reverse of minimalist. It was maximalist.
Yes.
And I have to ask, because this has happened probably the whole entire time we've been following you online. I'm like, you are a maximalist. And I'm like, how does her turnover team, like I want to know, like being a maximalist, you know, having these vintage pieces, how do you train your turnover team? Because it's not, you know, I'm more of a minimalist. Things are very basic. There aren't as many things. Like, what part of training, how do you train your team to maneuver that with these vintage pieces, with the new pieces, yeah, with being a maximalist? Is that a different learning curve for them?
Honestly, not really. And I would say, as much as my design style is maximalist, like in my house, I could, if you walked through where I live, like every surface is covered, every wall is covered. I would never do that in a rental, right? I would never go that far.
Okay.
So what you see in my listing for Chateau Vin is that's my minimalist version of maximalism, right? So So I only have a few little, you know, vases maybe sitting on top of a book, or, you know, I don't have every surface covered because that would drive everybody crazy. And my guests need somewhere to put their things. So I designed very intentionally to make sure that while I probably have more furniture in my house than other people would have, I've done it in a way to make sure they have somewhere to store their clothing, somewhere to put their bags, somewhere to put their makeup bag. I make sure every room has a vanity space and a hairdryer inside the dresser with a mirror above it so that girls can be doing their makeup and their hair in the bedroom while other people are in the bathroom. And, you know, I just really think all of that through. I make sure, because I sleep 12, I don't want to crowd the room with enough chairs for 12. So then I'll have other little ottomans that are underneath a console or something like that, where there's sort of that temporary seating, that to make sure there's always, if they want to sit around the coffee table and play games, that they can do that. And people have somewhere to sit. They're not sitting on the floor. So I just think through all those things, you know?
And I have other questions that I wasn't able to ever ask via social media. And I think this is going to help so many people. You have, which you've sold a few of your short-term rental properties, and you've seen those through, you know, hosting for years and years and then selling them. Can you offer us, what are some of the tips and tricks on when people are wanting to sell their home as a vacation rental? What was an advantage that you had? What did you use as a tool, you know, and to try to get maximum value out of your properties when you were selling them, you know, quote unquote, turnkey vacation rental? What did you learn through the selling process? Because you've sold a few at this point in time.
I sold them all at one point in order to recast my portfolio.
Okay.
Yeah, because that was one thing getting into all of my rentals that I did not have. It was nowhere on my radar to say, is this the best market to get into? Am I going to have maximized profit? It was an opportunity. It was a good buy. And I jumped in, right? But I, now knowing what I know, I knew that I could, with fewer properties, earn more money in different markets. So that's why I sold everything. So on Cape Cod, when I sold both of those homes, I was not able to sell either successfully as a vacation rental. And I tried really, really hard, you know, to sell the business with it and all of the business assets and the 1,000 people I had on my email list and all that different stuff. Both homes sold to people that just wanted them as a second home. My house, in the second house in Cape Cod, I had it on the market. I tried so hard to sell the whole LLC, the whole thing. It just did. There just wasn't enough income because it was so seasonal that I just don't think that people were thinking that way. Like, nobody was looking to buy a business on Cape Cod unless, you know, I think they would have wanted to see multiple properties. I don't know. It just didn't work. But my little tiny homes that I had in Southern California in the desert, those I was able to sell two of them as functioning vacation rentals, where they just took over and kept all the stuff that was in there. One girl, you know, redid it a little bit in her own style. But those two, what I did is I put together I don't know if pro forma is the right word for it, but I put together a document that showed them all of the financials, what the expenses were. I offered the whole list of all the people that were all the team that was already functioning and cleaning and handyman and all that stuff. I offered the whole package so they could literally just step in and continue renting. I even found a way, and this is a real pet peeve for me, when people sell a property and cancel bookings. Mm. Not okay. I just, you know, we have to be good stewards of our guests. When they book at a hotel, they never worry about being canceled on, right? Mm. So why do we think that's okay to do to people as hosts? And so I think that if you are thinking about selling your vacation rental property, you need to take your calendar down to maybe 3 months out, only be booking 3 months out, so that when, or if you know that you're going to close escrow 6 months out, do it then, but try to not have bookings on the calendar beyond that. You can't always control it, but try. Then I try to find people that will honor the bookings in place, right? And then now you can make them a co-host. There's ways to kind of transfer that over so they can still manage the booking and you can let go. So there are ways that you can do that nice transition. And I just would let my guests know, hey, there's going to be a new owner, but everything's going to be as it was advertised. Nothing's going to change. They understand the process. They're going to take great care of you. And I vet the people buying my rental too, that I put so much love and care into it. I want to make sure that if I'm handing my guests off to somebody, that they're going to be treated well in the same way that I would have. So, you know, now that's idealistic, right? It worked out on both of those properties for me. Both of the people that took them over went on to have like all 5-star reviews. So I was very happy with that. But I understand you can't always, you know, sometimes you just have to take the buyer that's there. But anyway, those were some of the things that I did. And I prepared my rental knowing that I want to sell it. And I timed when I was going to sell it to not be trying to sell in the high season. And then I even offered to keep, say, 20% of the bookings that were in place, meaning like 20% of the revenue, and the rest would get paid out to them. So they would be walking into income.
Nice.
Right. Wow. And they loved that because they knew they already had cash flow lined up. They didn't have to start from scratch.
And did you end up getting higher than market value for the two smaller homes that you were selling more as a vacation rental business?
I would say yes. Especially because they were designed really, really cute. And those were in a hot springs resort. And of course, I sold right before COVID. I had the best timing, you guys, seriously. Just the best luck, the best timing. Anyway, yeah, sold right before COVID. So to say, did I sell above market? Yeah, at the time, yes. Right. But then shortly after, you know, values exploded. And it was in an area that everybody wanted to buy a house or, you know, get into Airbnb at that time. So anyway, you know, if I had held on for two more years, I would have probably tripled what I sold them for.
It's okay. That's in the past.
And yeah.
So you've clearly, you know, been in the game for a long time. What's your take right now on Airbnb bust? It's over. Give us some of your wisdom from, you know, being, you know, seeing so much of the transformation, and obviously you're sold four to reinvest in one. So when people come to you, Airbnb bust, and they're nervous, what's your comeback to them?
It's Airbnb. It's Airbnb bust for crappy hosts. Like, period. It's, if you are a host, like the three of us here, you're fine. You're going to survive, right? It's coming back down to, you know, back, I think there's always been crappy hosts, but it wasn't on the radar the way Airbnb is on the radar of people now, as far as, oh, this is a new way to make extra cash flow, right? It's become a trend. It's a whole thing. Whereas pre-COVID, like, to me, we're just back to normal. This is normal. This is what it was all the years that I was hosting, and it wasn't even called hosting. I don't even know what we called it before Airbnb coined
the managing my rental.
I mean, they were vacation rentals, right? It wasn't an STR. It wasn't a short term. Anyway, all these new terms. So I'm thriving still because I kill it for my guests. My guests love when they stay at my rental, they love it. I pour into them. I dote on them. I take care of them. I see them. I acknowledge them. They're people to me. They're not just some rando sleeping in my house, right? And I think that there's been such a rush into this industry of people that just want to make money and don't understand you're buying a hospitality business. Like, these guests are what matters most. Like, not just your cute rental that is going to fall apart in 2 months because you bought the cheapest possible furniture. The guests, the people staying, like, that is what this business is. And for me, it is so personally fulfilling to not only get that amazing feedback from them when they're raving in my reviews, but just knowing that I provided a special time for them, right? I just had a family come and stay. Their brother was diagnosed with ALS and he didn't have a whole lot longer to live. And so they had a family reunion and, you know, they asked, can we have extra family over? And of course. And so at the end of it, she just was like, this was such a special, wonderful, we picked the perfect house. Thank you so much. It was so wonderful. They took so many pictures and she's like, we had so many photo shoots and made so many memories. And it's just like, that is what this is. My house isn't a hotel. It is a home and they're my guests. And that's how I approach it. And I think that the people who approach it in that way, right, in a heart-centered way, they're going to be fine. Now, are there some markets out there that are just not doing well? Yeah. Cut your losses. It's okay if it's not working and you need to sell. That's okay. You didn't fail. Things shift, things change. So be okay with cutting your losses and then reinvesting somewhere else better. But I think that's why two people getting into this industry, they think that they can just get a rental anywhere and they're just going to make money. It is not a guarantee. It wasn't before COVID and it isn't now. You still just have to be wise in your decisions. So that's my thoughts on the Airbnb bus.
What a wonderful way to wrap up this episode full of wisdom and insight. And from someone who's been in the industry for a very long time, Marilyn, thank you so much for everything you've shared with us today. Where can our listeners follow you, find out more about you? I know we kind of gave that plug at the beginning, but from your point of view, what's the best way to follow your journey and to learn from you?
Instagram is where I hang out the most. So I would say my Instagram account, my handle is just my name, Marilyn Taylor, and Marilyn is with two N's. I'm sure there will be a link.
There will be.
I also have marilyntaylor.com, but Instagram really is the best place to come find me and everything that I offer.
Amazing. And you offer, listeners, she offers so much. Obviously, continue hanging out with Annette and myself, but adding Marilyn in there is just going to make you the most well-rounded host you could possibly be and investor. Marilyn, thank you so much for your time. With that, I am Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are.
Thanks for visiting. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for additional information about today's episode. And please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week.
Ever wonder what it would be like to have personalized guidance from Annette and me? Imagine achieving the same incredible results we helped Amy achieve, increasing her overall revenue by a staggering 187% by diving into her biz numbers. Or perhaps you'd love to boost your hosting business like Miranda, who added a fantastic $10,000 by refining her pet policy. Well, here's a scoop. There's only one way to get that one-on-one support from Annette, myself, our expert coaches, and our industry pros is by attending our on-demand workshop. Trust us. It's worth it. During the workshop, we'll make an offer to all of our attendees to join our membership. Once you're a part of our exclusive membership, you'll gain access to our elite community of hosts in our private Facebook group. This is where the magic truly happens. Members are engaging in discussions about their business numbers, occupancy rates, how to handle guest challenges, and providing unwavering support to one another. Plus, we will have live coaching calls to help you dive deeper into portfolio growth, team building, marketing, and so much more. Don't wait any longer. Head on over to www.hostmasterclass.com right now to secure your spot and embark on this exciting journey with us. That's www.hostmasterclass.com. Trust us, you won't regret it.